Wow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 335. It's three, and it's five. And of course, it is the ENS Wolves podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Judah. Delighted to be joined as ever by Mr. Liam Keane. Keane, how's it going, Bebe?
I tell you what, I'm not looking forward to wrestling references. I think you are an embarrassment.
I've flown all the way back from Philadelphia for this podcast on Tuesday. Bear in mind I was in Philadelphia this time yesterday, and I get in return is a barrage of abuse.
People at Molyneux asked me the other day where you were.
Well, obviously, because the main event's not there.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. Okay. The final boss, me.
The final there. Boss.
see what I did there. See what I did.
I like it.
And I'll describe you as the Undertaker. You know, past your best.
Here we go.
Getting on a little bit.
Yeah.
I saw that he made an appearance.
A surprise appearance he did, yeah. Chokeslam. Chokeslam the Rock.
Chokeslam and then went away because he's full of arthritis and had to hide back under the covers.
Okay. Yeah, in the bed, are we?
Oh, I don't know, mate. It's a load of rubbish. I know you're aware of this tweet, but I'm gonna read it out. Rory Jennings, who does stuff on TalkSport, and he's a Chelsea guy. He's very fondly thought of in the football sphere. I've got nothing against him, so I don't know the guy, but he looks
a bit of a prick, doesn't he? Let's be honest, but carry on. come on, give it to me.
He is loved.
Never heard of him before, by the way.
Amongst football fans. If you're an adult and you're into WrestleMania, the chances of you being the thickest person in any room you've ever been in are exceptionally high. that's an excellent tweet, I think.
I mean, the guy's obviously had no childhood. He's had no upbringing. I never heard of him until a couple of people referenced me and sent me his tweet a couple of days ago. Apparently, he's posing with a billboard because he's on a podcast. I mean, I've never, ever, ever made in Chelsea or something like that. Never heard of the guy.
He slipped up slightly there. Made in Chelsea is the show that's, I don't know if it's still on, but he used to be on Channel 4.
He used to be on though, didn't he? And now he's on TalkSport and stuff.
No, he was never on Made in Chelsea. Made in Chelsea is that like posh, like reality TV thing.
Right.
I think back in the day, he used to be an EastEnders actor. A long time ago.
Okay. Well, I don't mind EastEnders, to be honest.
But no,
pulling
he's,
it back
he's,
now.
He's more Cockney rather than posh Kensington.
Right, okay. But and now he likes football and he's doing that, is he?
I can't believe you're ripping into him. I mean, he's never going to hear this, so it's fine. But
Well, he's ripping into, you know, 98% of the population who love wrestling.
98% of the population?
Well, maybe 99.
High number.
It's okay to enjoy wrestling. It's okay to be cool. Wrestling's cool now. It's fine.
Yeah, no, it is cool. It is cool.
Yeah.
My question mark is a 43-year-old man going on his own. had I been there with, I don't know, some friends or maybe even a child if I was a father, and I sat there and turned around and saw a 48-year-old man sweating with excitement watching men in very tight lycra jumping around. I mean, this sounds like jiu-jitsu, mate. It sounds like my kind of thing.
Look, I've got to say, there were some interesting characters over the last few days that I have walked past. I'm not into holding a belt round with you, downtown Philadelphia. There's a lot of people who've got belts around their waist and shoulders.
Not sure about
I think
that.
That's a little bit too much. But I like it. I mean, I love athletes with great physiques and talent going down in agony over the slightest touch, writhing on the floor, trying to take out the referee. But less about West Ham versus Wolves. Let's talk about WrestleMania, baby.
That's poor. Look, you know what? Before I ask you about it, let me just finish my opinion on this. I've never been interested, never watched it as a kid, never really my thing. But I will give you this.
Go on.
Some of the clips I saw and the sort of theatrics of it and the production, all that kind of thing, it looks kind of fun.
Mate, it's the best of all time. This was the best of all time. That's why I went. It's going to be the greatest of all time.
As much as I've been slagging it off, I can concede that happily because I don't really care about it. But more importantly, did you have a good time?
It was And I've loved wrestling since I was very young, and dipped out a bit when I started into kind of like after the Attitude Era, and then I've come back in maybe the last 6 to 8 years. And the standard, the quality, it's just an escape. Like, people like to play on the computer. You like to play Mario Kart or GoldenEye or whatever it is these days. You know, I'll just sit and watch a bit of Raw or SmackDown. I think it's great. I actually learn a little bit as well. They're fantastic on the mic. Kind of enjoy watching what they say, how they do it. It's, you learn a little bit as well. There's a guy who's famous commentator. He's got a great show as well on ESPN called Pat McAfee. I don't know whether you've heard him. A lot of people will do. His own talk show is massive on YouTube. Now it's on ESPN All Sports. He's a commentator there now. So, you know, it's not just about the wrestlers, but everything about it, but the production and the stadiums. It was John Cena there and The Rock and Undertaker. And it was just very nostalgic Attitude Era for people who like it. But, you know, I'm looking at a couple of those physiques though, Keenan. I'm thinking there's some big muscles going on there, and I'm thinking they might have taken a couple of enhancements on the way through into the ring. Peeps, don't do steroids. That's all I'm gonna say. That's my thing. Don't do steroids. It makes you angry, massive mood swings, gives you acne, makes your balls really, really, really tiny. Actually, come to think of it, Keno, you've been on the juice.
There's no... There is absolutely no need. I tell you what, people from a mile off could see where you were going with that. I tell you what, though, I could get into wrestling with some of the ladies.
Oh, mate. I'm honestly, I don't know whether you are. There's a Aussie called Rhea Ripley in there who's kind of like almost like this 6'2" dominatrix who's absolutely incredible in the ring, like ridiculous. And then there's a new girl as well called Jade Cargill who's like a Marvel comic superhero. She's insane. Just muscles there. I think I showed you a picture of her, did I? A couple of weeks ago.
I think you did, yeah. I mean, like,
it's like something off the X-Men. It's absolutely ridiculous. But there's obviously some very beautiful women there. There's some very talented women there. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I did a bit of sightseeing. Ran up the Rocky steps. Never seen a Rocky film, to be honest, which isn't great for me. People will be screaming. She will be screaming at the microphone because, you know, talk about being a film buff. Rocky, never really seen it all the way through. I haven't seen any of the Creeds. Any good, Keno? You see any of them?
I'll be honest, of all of the Rocky films and the Creed films, I've only ever seen the first Rocky film. I've never seen the rest of them.
I don't know what happens in them, but I haven't really seen them and sat and watched them.
Yeah, I think it's worth doing. You know what all of this talk about scrapping and wrestling and fighting?
Yeah.
You know what? This sort of brings me on to my own little scrap at Molyneux.
Oh, well, I was going to come on to that, but you can go for it now. Let's hit me with it.
How would you like to set it up? Because I've beaten you to the punch, so to speak.
Well, no, it's fine. Let's go with it. Let's go with it. Wolves on West Ham 2. Let's work back in time. Let's go to when the goal was disallowed. You said, and I've seen a lot of people on social media. Obviously, I wasn't there. I was watching it in my hotel room. By the way, Keno, you'd be proud of me. Sophie Tell, I went 4-star, not 5-star.
Oh,
slummed
well done.
It.
I'm impressed.
Slummed it. And guess what? I went premium economy. I didn't go business.
I'm actually shocked. Genuinely,
mate,
shocked.
Mate, honestly, it was
genuinely
tough.
Genuinely shocked.
I struggled, to be honest, but I just about made it. So,
is this the same man
I thought you'd
said,
be quite proud of me.
The same man who said, I've never walked onto a plane and turned right.
I actually had to turn. I didn't turn right. It was up the stairs. But, you know, at the same time, I did feel a little bit dirty, cheap and used going up the stairs and not turning left. I've got to be honest. But yes, so let's go back in time to the crazy moment where Molyneux was incensed. It was as toxic as I think a lot of people, including yourself, have ever seen it, as angry, the raw emotion. I think maybe not just because of the moment in the game, how important it was, but maybe just a culmination of everything that's gone on. And we'd almost forgotten about those three letters for a little bit because, you know, we weren't talking about it as much, and then it reared its ugly head in the worst case scenario. And then, Liam, you were assaulted physically, emotionally and verbally.
I was...
Please let the peeps know.
I was attacked by a vicious...
This is genuine, by the way. This isn't, you know, attacked, the talk obviously of wrestling. This is real life. This is proper skin on skin. So carry on.
Yeah, it was skin on skin, crikey. Yeah, an interesting
plenty
moment
of that in Philadelphia.
So yeah, as you just said there, I've for quite a while, and perhaps for as long as I can remember, that was the angriest I've seen Molyneux. Maybe the 4-0 loss to Leicester last season springs to mind. There might be a couple of others I could bring up, but that one was bad. I mean, obviously boos ringing around, and not for the players and not for Gary O'Neill. There were chants of support and applause of support for the players and for the staff after the game. But the boos towards Tony Harrington, the referee, and his officials, the number of fans sort of leaning over the barricades to scream at the officials. I mean, it was really loud. It was really intense. There were people near the press box that were sort of shouting things down to us, not necessarily having a go at us, but sort of saying like, "God, yeah, what's going on here? We need answers," kind of thing.
Sure. Which I've, and you've got the video monitors, etc., as well.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
They just
exactly
instantly like gravitate towards the press box.
Yeah, exactly. Which is obviously no issues. But I'm sort of sat just right next to the couple of steps that go down. So it goes straight from the concourse, and you can go left or right up into the stand, or you can go down literally three steps and the press box is right there. I'm sat right by the steps, and bearing in mind I'm looking forward, I'm trying to focus on writing, I'm trying to focus on what's happening in front of me, I'm ignoring sort of a lot of the calls down, not because there's any issues, but more because you can't really get involved, you've got to try and sort of focus on doing the job. And bless, there was a couple of stewards stood there who, as nice as they were to me after this happened, asking me if I was okay and everything, they didn't actually stop anyone from getting past when it was all happening. I was like, guys, come on, do me a favour here. So,
but I'll tell you what, they'll ask you to move your camera bag or your laptop bag for safety purposes, because that's what I get every bloody week. Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Can you use your little, I've got a little cable out there, there's a little strap in your back, and you just tuck that in. But when you're about to just get beaten up, yeah, all of a sudden it's a free-for-all.
I know. So this chap runs over, I won't say his name because he has messaged me on Twitter since to apologise. But
Tom.
He it wasn't Tom. You're a nasty guy. He sort of runs over, goes down these couple steps, approaches me, and he, I could hear him saying my name, and as he sort of comes over to me, and I thought he was going to sort of put his arm around me, and he wasn't actually having a go at me, he was having a go at the situation. So he was like, I can't remember exactly what he was saying, but it was something like, what is this? I mean, I'm sure there was a few expletives in there as well, but yeah, like, what is this? What's going on? I can't believe it, blah, blah, blah. But rather than sort of put his arm on me or hand on my shoulder or tapping me on the shoulder or anything like that, he runs up behind me, and before I get a chance to turn round, he smacks me on the back with his hand.
Why are you working your laptop and stuff? When you're just walking, you're looking straight
there
ahead
at my laptop, like incredibly hard, like really whacks me.
What?
So
I'd have lost it, mate. Because you're pissed off as well. Sorry for language, but you're obviously annoyed. You're Wolves fan, you know. You're annoyed as anything. You've got a right. You've obviously got to change your match report. You've got everything going on. You've got all the emotion. You've got all the frustration. You've got all the Europe situation going on. You've got, you know, West Ham rivals. You don't need that, do you?
No,
you don't need an armbar in your back.
There's a lot. I don't think you know what an armbar is, but I can show you one day.
Okay.
There's a lot going on, and he just hits me like really hard.
Oh no!
I turn around and sort of not knowing what's going on, because I didn't know if it was someone having a go at me or if it was someone kicking off with anything I've said or anything I've reported. I don't know if it was someone who didn't like me, might be someone I've blocked on Twitter. Oh, I don't know what it is.
There'd be a line going out the door, mate, to be honest, but carry on.
No, but there's only a couple. I turn around and sort of my instant reaction is to, I mean, I did, I won't use them now, but there was a couple of expletives saying, mate, what the, are you doing? Why are you hitting me? What? I just sort of, and I went to stand up and I was like,
hello.
I was going into defensive mode. I started to get out of my chair and I was like, what on earth are you doing? What's going on?
Getting the white belt on.
And he, blue belt, come on. he starts like, just like apologising straight away, like, oh my God, I didn't mean to do that. I just started going, mate, what are you doing? Why are you hitting me for? What's going on? And I was just like so frazzled.
Yeah.
And then he goes to walk away and then sort of instantly turns back, puts his arm on me, like, Liam, I just want to apologise. I didn't mean to do that. And he was really, really apologetic. And I was just like, oh, it's okay, mate, it's okay. And I just had to get back to what I was doing.
That's bizarre.
I know, it was. And then he's messaged me on Twitter since. I won't use his name because I don't want to embarrass him or anything. But
Jack.
Stop saying random names because you might get it right if you keep saying random names. He was really apologetic and said he shouldn't have done it. He didn't mean to do it
here
like
the moment.
That. He was meant to like get my attention and have a conversation. But I think with everything that was going on and how angry Molyneux was, he just sort of reacted in the way he did. So it was. I'm glad it wasn't someone actually having a go at me because that could have been a problem. I mean, I didn't really want there to be. Videos of me choking a Wolves fan out. choking.
I thought it might have been my mate from the away days who wants to demolish me every time he sees me.
So I'm glad it wasn't someone.
He could have been the same guy.
Yeah, I'm glad it wasn't someone who was actually annoyed because that could have been an issue. I've never had that. I wouldn't want it to boil over like that. But luckily, it was someone who was trying to actually be nice and have a conversation with me, but just did it the wrong way by accident. And obviously, I messaged him back, and we were all sweet. It's all good. But it was an insane moment. Insane few minutes with what happened with the goal and the VAR and everything. It was pretty crazy.
I mean, it's good that you're obviously very forthcoming and you've spoken to the guy since and it's all finished now. So when the police came last night, Lee, when you pressed charges, what's the latest situation with Tom?
You're a nasty, nasty guy. It is not Tom. I can just... All right. I'm just going to double down on that.
Paul?
No, I mean, to be fair, I actually had...
Simon.
You're getting close. No. There was... considering you weren't there, people obviously realise that I am approachable and nice. Because when you're there, they think, oh, this guy's such an arse. He's like, you can't really approach him. He's just not a nice person. You know what I mean? So
that was Spears. It wasn't me. I was happy to take a picture with anyone. You know me. He's the one who walked on the opposite side of the road.
I didn't want to talk to anyone. He told me about that. There was actually a couple of really nice people who approached me about Molyneux before the game. And just, there was one guy after the game, after this stuff had all happened, saying, oh, I love the pod and having a chat with me and stuff. So, I said this to the guy when he messaged me on Twitter as well. I've never got any issue with chatting to any fans anytime I see them. I always enjoy it. It's always great. Just maybe don't hit me future.
I mean, you must have just been happy that you remembered your name, to be honest, because normally it's Nathan. And, oh, you're a good lad as well, aren't you?
Mate,
you
know, honestly, we've had that a couple of times.
We've had that a couple of times. It's great.
They start speaking to you and they've looked at me and they've gone, oh, you're right. And I'm like, you don't know who I am, do you? You haven't got a clue, have you? Which is fine. It's not a problem, but it just made me laugh because they start chatting to you. It's happened a handful of times.
Oh, it's so funny. I love it, though. Well, I'm glad you obviously just being a bit more serious, I'm glad you're okay, mate, because first of all, you were sat in the seat that I would normally be in. Was that right as well?
Yeah, I'd moved.
So you took one for the team.
I'd moved over to have a bit more space and sort of lounge and spread out. And I was in what the seat you normally would have sat in. So you would have got clobbered around the head instead of me if it was.
Mate, he would have hit the floor, mate. If it was me, he wouldn't have got up.
Poor.
Oh dear. Right, let's less about the assault then, and more about RGBH and about the decision, because that's what everybody's talking about. That's what everybody's still talking about. Watched it real time, very frustrating. Watched it more and more and more, and the angrier you get. Crazy, really, when you think that 95% of the people think that it is, including West Ham, a goal. And of course it is, because there's not a chance in a million years that Fabianski's got is in any kind of situation where he's going to save that. It's a goal. It's a goal, and it's a massive goal. It's a goal when they've obviously had a great first half, a really poor second half, and we'll come on to that. in a little bit. And look, that's where they've got to take responsibility. And Mario Lemina's obviously spoken quite strongly after the game about that, which I think's, you know, fair play for him to be so passionate about it. But to deny Wolves that equaliser and also to give a European rival an extra 2 points is just such a double whammy that it's very difficult to swallow. I mean, Wolves, when Wolves as a team have lost more points this season through VAR than Everton have lost points through PSR, how can that be? Because that's true. I mean, it is 100% true. Wolves have lost more points this season than them breaching financial restraints twice and getting deducted. What's it now? Is it 6 points total, is it? Is it four? Because they got to get reduced to four originally, then the two? Is that right?
That's a good point. I can't remember if it did get reduced to six.
Was it six to reduce to four, or was it... I think it wasn't... I can't remember now.
I've lost track, because it's
so ridiculous. And it's all peels going on or whatever. But end of the day, Wolves have lost more points, is what I'm trying to say, which is insane. And is it going to cost them a European place? I mean, at this moment in time, probably. Probably is going to cost them a European place, depending on how they finish the season. But how can that be? I actually want your opinion on what's wrong. Who made the mistake? Was it VAR, or was it the referee by changing his decision when he's been presented with those facts again? Or do you blame both of them?
So if the first thing to mention is that by the letter of the law, the fact that Fabianski, whether he would have got to it or not, actually doesn't come into the wording within the law. However, I do think that should have an impact on it, because it's, even though it might be slightly subjective, I think it's an important part of the conversation. So the fact that's not in the law is a mistake in itself. But let's focus on what is in the law, and that is that Fabianski either has to be unable to... has his line of sight blocked, essentially, or be restricted in his movement. Now, the movement, he definitely isn't restricted, because Tuanda Traore isn't touching him. There's no other player that is touching
him. No, it's just in front of him.
It's just in front of him. So there's definitely no restriction there. The biggest question mark comes down to the line of sight. Now, Gary O'Neill, who described it as potentially the worst decision he's ever witnessed, and obviously David Moyes was very sympathetic with it, and there's been the vast majority of pundits and fans alike have said that it should have been a goal. I think Dermot Gallagher's come out and said that it was the correct decision, but there's a lot of people who disagree. The wording from Gary was that Fabianski can see over Tuanda's head and he can see the ball. And the fact that it's 4 yards out, and the fact that, you know, he wasn't going to get to it anyway, even though that isn't in the law, I think should be taken into account, in my personal opinion. Now, the way that the law works is that even having him in front, despite not seeing the line of sight, having him potentially impacting does play a part. So there are arguments to suggest that by the letter of the law, it is the right decision. And I can understand those arguments. And I can understand why they would look at it even after the goal was given. I can understand why you would at least look at it. I can understand the reason why you would question it. What I don't understand is, with the integrity of football, the way that the modern game is played, and the way that officials, I think, are very out of touch with football, how you can steal a goal away from a team for that situation, I think, for me, is not in keeping with the spirit of the game. I think it's, regardless of the laws or not, I think it is a poor decision. I really do. There's no way to get into it, even though that doesn't come into the law. I think it's an important point. Again, I'll mention that and keep mentioning it, because you could have had two goalkeepers there. It's going in the bottom corner. I just find it just leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
When it went to the monitor, did you think that's it? He's going to rule it off now.
I spoke to Dave Edwards for our column, and he used the phrase, the referee, once he's sent over to the monitor, he has to be courageous, and he wasn't. And that, I think, summed it up perfectly. It's a very difficult job being a referee, and I don't envy them at all. But how many of them have got a strong backbone? How many of them are courageous enough to use common sense and see that and think, we should not be denying a goal for that? and they don't unfortunately have that. It's just not.
Do you think that there's almost something that goes off? It must go off in their heads when they're called to the monitor. Christ, well, I must be wrong here, and I might as well. It's better for me to go with the panel who have looked at it and looked at it and looked at it again, and then want me to have a look at it again. If I say, yeah, I'm going to agree with your decision because you want me to have a look at it, then I can be absolved of anything. But if I keep my opinion or don't agree with what I'm being told or what I'm being told to look at again, then I might there might be a situation where I might have to speak to people because I might get it wrong. And I got told it's wrong, and I've kept to my decision. And so I'm going to be under more scrutiny after this game if I don't go with the option or the suggestion from VAR.
But then it comes to
what's the easy route.
What's the point in having the on-field referee then? You might as well just let VAR referee the whole game from the top of the park. It makes no sense. Mm-hmm. It's that comes down to that courage. There is no courageous attitude from these referees to say, right, I'm going to stick by my decision regardless of what I'm being told.
Maybe they're on the roids, mate. Maybe they're the ones with the tiny balls.
Maybe. I just think it's very silly. It comes from people who don't understand the elite game at the highest level. And I just don't think that the relationship is there now between clubs and fans and then referees on the other side. And how do you long-term improve the standards of refereeing? You probably need it to be encouraged at grassroots level. There's no reason why anyone I can see at a grassroots level that will want to get into the Premier League right now, because it's a tough job to do and you're constantly criticised. But it's a double-edged sword. You're criticised because of the mistakes that are constantly being made. It just doesn't sit right with me. And as much as I hate VAR, I'd get rid of it tomorrow. And even though you then have to rely on human error, but I'd rather do that and moan about that than have VAR. At the same time, the rules are also poorly worded and not fit for purpose, because to some argument it was the right decision, and that for me just doesn't sit right with me. And then the final point I make is that the fact that the goal is given, the fact that the linesman, the referee don't give it as a offside, the fact that not a single West Ham player argues against
it
or
appeals.
That's
exactly my point.
Not a single one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that the goal is given, and the fact that they overturn a goal being given. If it was the other way round, and the goal is, and it's given offside, and then they check a VAR, I can see an argument why they don't go back and give the goal. But the fact that the on-field decision was goal, and that's being changed, I think for me, it just stinks. I just don't like the way that the technology is used at all.
And it's still an extent because there's too much money in it. People are getting paid ridiculous amounts of money, more jobs, and it's not fit for purpose. And let's be honest, they're not fit for purpose. It's the people who are running it as well that are not fit for purpose. Not just the system, not just the rules, but the people who are running the asylum. That's the worrying thing, and that's why I think it makes so many people incredibly angry, taking away the ramifications of what this has meant for Wolves this season and going forward. It's the enjoyment factor's gone, and I would get rid of it tomorrow as well, Liam. I completely agree. I don't, you know, these offsides for half an elbow or a fingernail, like, just leave it to yes or no with the linesman. If he gives it, he gives it. If he doesn't, he doesn't. It would be great. Can you imagine? I guarantee you there would be widespread celebrations if they just got rid of VAR. I mean, if you took a poll now, if I put a poll out now, not just for Wolves fans, but for, let's say, the whole of the Premier League, keep VAR, maybe make some changes, but keep VAR or get rid of it altogether. I think that genuinely, if you ask every single fan of every single team in the Premier League, you'd be 80, I think it's going to be an 80-20 split in favour of getting rid of it.
I think so. And it takes as well for the sort of the fee-paying public who spend a lot of their hard-earned
money. People are falling out of love for the game.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want to go.
It takes away a lot of excitement. It takes away a lot of the entertainment of football. Wolves fans regularly, whether the VAR check is in Wolves' favour or not, whether it's checking a Wolves penalty or it's a penalty against Wolves, regardless of what the check is for, Wolves fans are regularly chanting, boring, boring, boring,
mm-hmm.
because it's not football. it's over analyzing and over refereeing, over officiating a game. I just don't like it at all. I think it takes away so much from the modern game that is so spectacular for so many reasons. I mean, look at some of the games Wolves have been involved in this season that haven't had VAR intervention. They've been brilliant, brilliant games, and it's just, I just think it's so, it's almost archaic for something that it should be revolutionary technology. It's a bizarre way of implementing it by people who I agree are not fit for purpose.
You're angry, the players are angry, the fans are angry. Well, the chairman's angry, Liam, because he spoke out about this as well.
Yeah, and this is, to be honest, a really big development, actually, because Wolves have never been a club that have, or very rarely at least, that have released statements in this kind of way. Obviously, we've seen, I think it's Arsenal and Liverpool this season have put out club statements about VAR, and there's been different things here and there. With obviously, Nottingham Forest have been a club that have been very publicly angry about decisions going against them as well. And Wolves have never been the club that have done that. I think they've been very, very reluctant to do that. Of course, there would have been people behind the scenes that would be desperate to come out and say something publicly, whether it's an interview or whether it's a statement like Jeff Shee did. But there would have been people that would have been stopping that from happening and saying, look, I don't think we need to say anything publicly. Let's hold far for the time being.
Hold council and keep our council to the end
exactly,
of the season.
Yeah. And for him to do this and be insistent on putting this out is very much a I've had enough scenario. It was a fairly well-worded statement in the sense that it wasn't too inflammatory, but it was quite clear to say that football doesn't really need VAR, and I can't really disagree with him. It's just now how that statement is going to serve him going forward, because there'll be people at the Premier League and the PGMOL, I'm sure, won't be happy about it. So it'd be interesting to see how it develops from there for Wolves. But yeah, it was definitely a big moment because we've not seen that really from Jeff or from any sort of hierarchy at Wolves. So to add to that point, it sort of links up when I talk about enough's enough. Gary O'Neill said in his post-match press conference that the players previously, because the Wolves obviously have had a lot of bad decisions go against them this season. We've not had one for what, a couple of months or so, maybe a little bit longer than that. Mm-hmm. It's been a bit quiet on the VAR controversy front as far as Wolves are concerned. And then all of a sudden this happens. But Gary O'Neill said from those previous moments when they found that they weren't being respected, he said, by the officials, and that Wolves were felt like they were being, well, the players were at least, felt like they were being out to get. The players wanted to do something about it, and he had to talk them down and hold them back from it. Now, what that is, he wouldn't say. He was followed up with a few more questions to ask what that action would be, and he didn't want to say. But he said, I can't hold my players back now. It'd be silly of me to stand in front of them after the way I've reacted to this decision and say, you can't do anything about it. Be interesting to see now what the players do. There'll be people talking them down again, I'm sure, but whether they take action to their own hands. It's enough's enough is really the way Jeff Shee and a lot of the players feel after this latest controversy.
So let's move on to the game itself, Liam. Take the end of the game away. I mean, very much, a tale of two halves, but should Wolves have even been in that position? Are they their own worst enemies? I mean, because that was pretty poor second half display, really, wasn't it? And as much as what Mario Lemina said as well, and it's, you know, that they've got to be better.
Yeah, I mean, Mario was quite strong and obviously saying it's not acceptable, and yet we can't have a first half like that and a second half the way that they did. I mean, in that first half, considering that Tommy Doyle is playing on the left wing, Ryan Ignore is playing on the right wing, Sarabia is playing through the middle, that is as makeshift a front three as you're going to get for the most part. A single player in their natural position. All of them, to be honest, Sarabia scored the penalty, but he was, particularly first 5 minutes, all over the place, and then got better, but it's definitely not a massive impact despite scoring. But Tommy Doyle did very well on the left. We had Matt Doherty overlapping him. Those two interacted really well and linked up really well. Ignore was the star of the show as usual. Wolves, the biggest compliment I can pay is they controlled the game. And it was a strange game at times because there was quite a few lulls. It was a fairly quiet affair at times where West Ham in that first half were really slow and they were just happy for Wolves to have the ball, but Wolves at the same time controlled it and were really impressive in the grip, the vice grip that they had on the fixture, and they get the penalty, I think the right decision, score the goal, and you just want them to build from that. Now, West Ham made changes, and the big change being Mikel Antonio coming on, and he caused Wolves all sorts of problems in that second half. And alongside that, West Ham played...
No Connor Cody on the pitch either.
Exactly. West Ham played with a lot more intensity, and Wolves played with a lot less. And within that, Wolves started to retreat. They started to go back into their shell. They were sitting deeper. They were allowing West Ham to have the ball. They had no outball whatsoever. Nothing in behind. Ait Nouri goes off injured. Matheus Cunha comes on, really struggles to get into the game. Sarabia, very quiet. And they've got no outball at all. Wolves can't keep the ball. They can't string passes together. And West Ham are just dominating them. And it really is a game of two halves, the old cliche. And Wolves, considering the two halves, probably deserved a point, really, from the balance of it. But had they come out in the second half and had the kind of control over the game that they did in the first half, they'd have taken all 3 points. And that really is the big difference in the game.
Yeah, just going back to the Mario Lemina quotes, which are quite strong, and obviously you put them out the other day, Liam. I quite like they didn't mention injuries too much. Didn't mention about, you know, Neto and Huang and Bellegarde and these. You know, he's taking responsibility for the players that are on the pitch. They should be good enough to be performing, to be getting results. I know injuries have obviously cost them dearly and really cost them over this last month. Then they got away with it until then, but really come to hurt Wolves at the hugely crucial part of this season. But I just wonder, Liam, is anything else gone on? Because is it just missing good players? Is it just that? Or is there something else that's afoot here? Because they're definitely not the side that they were. And they've dealt with injuries with big players this season, but I just feel like something's missing a little bit. And yeah, it's easy to say, well, if Pedro Neto's missing or you know, Cunha being back in the side and being fit is missing. And I get that. But I just wonder whether there's something else that's not quite right at this moment in time.
Yeah, I get where the question comes from, because it's a bit of, there's a sort of odd feeling around.
Definitely.
Around it, isn't there? Yeah, I completely get it. I think considering that they played so well in that first half against West Ham, they can obviously do it, regardless of those players being out, and they can obviously perform. You have to take into account the injuries. It'd be silly not to, because they've got such a small squad, and they've lost all their key players, basically, or the vast majority of them. And you're relying on Ait Nouri and Lamina, who maybe has been a little bit off the last couple of games, and these kind of players to drag you through. And I think the injuries is going to be the biggest factor. So I sympathise with Wolves and where they're at with that. I think the second factor for me, and whether there is another one that you can think of, but for me, the second factor is bred from the injuries. And for me, it's almost a bitterness. There's almost a frustration amongst the players that are fit and available. And I think Gary as well, to say that, look, we were so close to a FA Cup semi-final. We were so close to Europe. And yeah, obviously they could still do it, but it becomes very difficult now with, you know, the points gap. We were so close to achieving all of this, and we had a little bit of bad luck. Obviously they were riding luck anyway with the size of the squad they had. And all of a sudden it's fallen apart a little bit. Now they've still got 7 games to put that right. There's, you know, it wasn't until these final 7 games in 21-22 season when Bruno Lage's team sort of fell apart in those final 7 games. So there's still an opportunity to do well towards the end of the season. So it hasn't completely fell apart, but it definitely has come off the hinges a little bit because of the injuries. And I think the bitterness and frustration from those injuries, and the players that are left are thinking, we've been left here with, you know, very little to work with, and we've got to try and drag out results in the best league in the world. So I think that's probably where it comes from. The players are knackered. I mean, you interviewed Mario, as I say, after the game. He had to lean up against a wall to talk to me. He couldn't even stand up straight. I then saw on his Instagram the following day that he was recovering at home, sat with these things around his legs and trying to recover the best way they can. I mean, these players are out on their feet. And then, you know, Ait Nouri gets a little knock, and obviously we'll find out where he's at. But then you lose any more of these players and you're going to have no one left. And then you'll be playing up front at this rate.
Crikey. I don't know if I'm getting things around my legs after a game as treatment. I can deal with that, Keena. Crikey. Happy days. I'll run anywhere. I'll run anywhere for you.
I don't know what they were.
Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Yeah,
I've got ball boy duties anyway, mate. I can't go on the pitch.
Oh, can someone from Wolves please get in touch? I keep forgetting to ask about this. We need to.
By the way, when you said refereeing is difficult, refereeing is not difficult. Honestly, I love refereeing. I would look. Do you know what? That's one of the things that I feel like if I was back to being like 21, 22 again, not stone in years, I would go through and do my referees course because I feel like I'll be a very good referee. And I love it. I've done it recreationally before and like amateur stuff. Love doing it. I love to do referee. I'd do refereeing tomorrow, honestly.
There's still time.
There's not time. Time's not on my side. You've just said.
No, I know. Look, you are getting on. But
Father Time, Undertaker, arthritis.
Well, there is. There's referees that are older than you, though. If you.
Yeah, but you can't fast track me now. I'm not. If I do it now, I'm at best. I'm doing Telford United against Hensford Town. I'm not going to go. You can't do Premier League now.
Oh, I reckon you could do it.
You reckon?
Let's do a feature. Let's get you out there.
I'll do a on-field under-21s practice game.
I think that's perfect.
I love it.
That would be funny. I reckon I'd be from these sidelines giving you so much abuse.
Oi, Fraz, come here. I like your first name, but off, gone. talking about him, that's my little segment and segue into 21s. I mean, look. 2-1 defeats are the topic of the week, aren't they? Lost 2-1 to Sunderland, but not really interested in the scoreline, interested in some of the player development and one player in particular who everyone, and I mean everybody, it's a wrestling reference as well, but you won't know who it is, is talking about, not LA Knight, it's talking about Noah Lamina. You got to see him last night in the flesh, playing football, crossing that white line, Liam, which is a treat in itself. How did he do? And what position is he going to be starting in at Forest on Saturday?
That's a great way to set that up. Wasn't just me watching on. Mario Lamina was watching on.
Wow.
In Kidderminster. Sporting director Matt Hodge was there, but obviously he's at a lot of the games and there was other sort of Wolves stuff and stuff there. Let's start with the positive, shall we? And it's going to be it's going to be a quick sentence. I'm only joking. He's quick. He's got good feet. He's tricky. I think he looks a confident player who wants to impress and wants to make things happen. Mm-hmm. And there's 100% a raw talent in there. There's no part of me that doesn't think that he could be a good player. Whether he's a good player for Wolves in the Premier League or not is another question, but could he make a career and have a good player? Absolutely. There's lots of really good signs and really good moments that he had. Now, the issue from Wolves' point of view, or at least from a Noah Lamina point of view at this time, is that raw is the key word there for me. There was a tweet that Wolves Academy put out with a clip of him doing a run down the left, and it was a nice run. He went past one player, but he was just really quick, got to the byline. It was a sort of cross come shot sort of ball into the box, and the keeper claimed it. Nothing incredible, but certainly showing a couple of the skills and characteristics that he's got. And there was an incredible amount of replies to this tweet in comparison to what the Academy tweets will normally get. And also we've had them with the podcast as well, people suggesting, why is he not starting it? Is he going to start at Forest? Why is he not getting minutes? I can't believe Gary Neil's not playing him, blah, blah, blah. You have to watch the full game. And he played about 70 or so before he came off with what looks like, ironically, a bit of a hamstring knock.
Hamstring United, this is.
I know. Albeit, I did see him after the game and he was walking okay. So I think hopefully he should be fine. It won't be anything too bad.
But, no. So 4 months, yeah.
Yeah, only the quick 4 months. But you have to watch the full picture. And the full picture is someone who's got raw talent, but needs to work a lot on his fitness. And I think he was out on his feet after 50, 60 minutes. And it's clear that he needs to work a lot on that. And that's something that Gary said publicly. Someone who, at this moment in time, in my opinion, is nowhere near ready for Premier League football. I think he's
Oh, wow, really nowhere near?
I think he's a long way off Premier League football. Now, I said in the last podcast, actually, I said I think it'd be odd if we don't see him maybe get a couple minutes here and there between now and the end of the season in the Premier League. But I said a start would be crazy. I think he's going to take a long time. From what I saw last night, or despite a couple of the good signs, unless Wolves are chasing a game and it's a big game they're just throwing everyone on, I'd be surprised if he gets any minutes for Wolves in the Premier League this season. I think
he's been on the bench so many times.
Yeah,
I think that's just needs must.
I think so, and I think we'll see him not be on the bench quite quickly if you know Cunha and Hwang and all these players are coming back pretty soon. Now, I've spoken quite a lot, you know, about some of the other lads, Leon Chiwame and Nathan Fraser, about not wanting to. I think there's a right way to criticise them, and there's a right way to go about talking about them and analysing them, and not being too unfair on them, because a lot of social media stuff is really harsh on some of these young lads. And I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that same thing with Noah Lamina. I outlined the positives. I think it's important to highlight the positives, but it's also important, I think, to be realistic. And I don't think he's a Premier League footballer right now. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean he won't be in the future. Doesn't mean that in time, and those, if you can get those, some of those characteristics out of him, there's a really well-built, quick, tricky winger in there. You just need to get that out of him and get him used to his surroundings and be a bit fitter, and maybe you will get something out of him. I just don't think he's there yet. Considering, I made this point in the last podcast, that he couldn't get a game in the second division of Italian football, you know, it says a lot. There's a chance we could see him, as I've just said, if there's, you know, chasing a game. You know, Gary said he is a consideration from the bench. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him, but my prediction is he won't play this season.
But hasn't this changed quite dramatically from when he first came in and we were asking about Noah Lamina, and all of a sudden Gary Neil said, look, he's been incredibly, the blown us away in the way that he's come and hit the ground running, and he might not be involved this week, but the following week, you know, he's probably got a chance of being in the squad, and then he is in the squad, and then he's just constantly not used. It's almost feel like his stock's reduced from that high point right at the very start, if you remember, when they were speaking very highly of him, Gary was anyway, in terms of first team training and getting involved in this season.
I'll add to that that Gary also has been consistently cautious in saying that he needs time, he needs fitness, he needs to get used to his surroundings, but he's a good player. And he also has consistently said he's one that we brought in for development, not to necessarily go straight into the first team. So as much as he was being complimentary at the beginning, he was also throwing in these comments that were quite telling, in my opinion. You've also got to remember that myself, not just me, but myself and other journalists reported at the time when he was arriving at Wolves to say that he isn't one for the first team straight away. This is someone who has been brought in as a development, also being brought in because obviously what happened sadly with Mario and Noah's father, that it was important that they had the family together. But from a footballing point of view, they also liked him as a footballer, someone they'd looked at, and that would be a development kind of signing, considering that it's a loan with a very small fee. So it shouldn't be a shock to anyone that he's not getting a lot of minutes. What is a shock to me is that sort of a lot of fans have jumped on it as a he's the saviour kind of player. No one's ever seen anything from him to suggest that. What we have seen from him is a player with raw talent who's going to need a bit of time. And from what I saw last night, is a player that is a raw talent but needs a decent amount of time to get himself up to speed. I expect him to have a good career. I hope he does well. Whether that's with Wolves or not is yet to be seen. But I just don't think he'll. And if he does play for Wolves in the Premier League this season, it won't be a big impact. And if it is, and I'm wrong, I will eat a slice of humble pie. But I just, from what I've seen, and I've seen a few lads come through, and I think I've got a decent enough eye for, you know, where they're at. Obviously not from a scouting or analytical point of view, but from covering the club. And I just don't see that just yet with him. I think he needs a lot more time.
It's probably the longest I've ever spoken about a player who's yet to make a first-team appearance for Wolves in the team. But such is the demand for Noah Lamina. And I get it. You know, you're coming from Paris Saint-Germain. You're the younger brother of, I assume, Wolves' player of the season. There's an excitement around it. He's more of an attacking midfielder. Wolves are short in that department. Wolves are losing games. They're bringing players on. So I get, you can understand where the questions come from, can't you? But I think exactly what you said, Lee, in the way that you've described it, described your observations of him, and the fact that he has not come on yet speaks volumes as to not only where he is at in his career path to the first team, but also where Gary O'Neill is in just getting bodies on a bench.
And you look at the kind of players they had on the bench. Ty Barnett, who's obviously a midfielder. Chirewa, who's been in around it for quite a bit. Fraser and Chuamu, who are both strikers. Noah Lamine, obviously, is a winger. You, because of the injuries they've had and the positions they've had to bring players in, there isn't really any other wingers in the 21s that are sort of where Noah Lamine is at. Because he has played a little bit of senior football, even though it was a small bit over in Italy. I think it was only one game, actually, in fact. But he was with PSG, did their pre-season tour last summer, and did really well with I know it's a friendly game, but still did really well over there. And they were hoping he might go on and do something, and then didn't have a very good loan at all for a few months, half a season. And they haven't really got anyone else from the 21s to step up in that kind of position. And they wanted someone in that position to fill the bench. So he's had to come on and do it. I personally don't think he's been close to coming on at any point. Gary Neil might tell me wrong. And he may give him that opportunity. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. He may give him that chance in the next few weeks with seven games to go. But I just think he's still a long way off. And you've got to be patient with him. And I say this also not just because of an analytical point of view where I'm giving my opinion, but also giving what I hope is an informed opinion on him. I also want to sort of put that message out to fans that don't put so much pressure on him straight away. Give him time. He's 18 years old. I mean, he's a kid, and he's not played a lot of football. Just give him a bit of time and don't expect the world from him straight away. And if it is better than we expect, then perfect. You know, I'd be happy as anyone else to see him do really well in the Wolves first team. But just don't expect it, and give him the opportunity to grow naturally.
Just enjoy your bonus being on the Swiss bench. Enjoy the snacks at half time. Enjoy the snacks before. You know, have your little bag of food afterwards, knowing that, you know, all you're going to do is do your post run warm downs, I guess. And also, Noah, when you're in the dugout, grab a little coffee, get yourself warmed up, get your little snuggles on, and, you know, you could have a coffee ready made for yourself and bring your own contraption from kettleandtoasterman.co.uk, Noah, because there is a DeLonghi beautiful espresso machine. Now, I love a little bit of an espresso shot in the morning. Get up, get some clothes on, get on the Peloton, try and bust out about 3 or 4K before you've eaten. But I always have a little espresso, and me and hopefully Noah Lamina, before he gets on the bench on Saturday, will be able to have this. It is a beautiful espresso machine. A really lovely look, bit of water at the back, fill that up, and you can have a shot of caffeine at any time of the day or night you want to. But Liam, how much are you spending? I mean, DeLonghi, one of the best makes going out there. But how much are you spending on this espresso machine, Bebs?
I'm going to refuse to answer your question until you pronounce the word correctly.
DeLonghi.
Not that word.
Espresso.
There's no X.
It's an espresso.
No, you just said it wrong again.
It's an espresso.
Espresso.
Espresso, that's what I said.
The Italians will be furious with you.
Espresso.
You're saying it right now, but you weren't for about three or four times.
You say it's not espresso, it's espresso.
You were infuriating me. I love an espresso
machine.
And that's a good brand as well. I don't own an espresso machine.
You're more of a gold blend guy, I get that. But
no, I'm in the market.
You're in the market. I've seen you on a night out.
That's... if you want, it's a good brand. It's a sought-after item. It's a delicious beverage. I think you've got to be looking at about 150.
Oh, mate, reduce. Keep reducing.
Don't tell me by percentage because I won't be able to figure it out.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying keep reducing.
120.
Oh, less.
90.
Less.
That's the hell. 65.
Less.
Oh, mate. 32 and a half.
£40.
Oh, I went too
40
low.
Of your English pound. You went too low. You went too low. £40. Can't go wrong with that, can you?
Steal. Bargain.
Oh, happy days. £40 DeLonghi Espresso machine. Get your hands on it today. KaitlinToastman.co.uk. Questions, peeps. Ready?
Ready.
Here we go. Not ready. Ian Payne, will we ever see again a front three of Cunha, Neto and Huang?
Oh, I hope so.
Good question.
It is a good question. Well, it probably hinges on whether Neto goes.
Well, no, we all know. You don't have to explain why it hinges. We all know why it hinges. Hinges on a lot of different factors, but will we ever see it? Answer the question.
Whoa.
Again.
You're fuming.
I'm just trying to move it on.
Yes.
Ooh.
I think I've changed my mind from a previous podcast where I said no, but I'm going to say yes.
You have. Okay, I'm going to say no. I don't think we ever see it again.
Oh, that's sad, isn't it?
It is sad.
But you got Tuana Chirewa to step up, mate, so you don't need it.
Got Noah Lamina, mate.
Wait, talking of bargains very quickly.
Go on.
Did an interview with Tuana Chirewa yesterday, and he scored the goal for the 21s, did really well.
He did.
Since found out, when they signed him from Ipswich in September,
yeah,
that he cost 175 grand.
Crikey, 175 G's, is that it?
That's it, an absolute bargain. Now, I'm sure there's probably something in there that, you know, means further down the line, Ipswich might be compensated more. But that was the upfront cheapest chips, mate. And I think he's a really good player.
You won't get out of bed for that. That's half of your salary.
He's one that's going to, again, needs a little bit of time, but he's shown, I think, a lot of really good signs and done well.
Who has the better career, professional footballing career? Tuanda Chirewa, easy for me to say. Nathan Fraser or Leon Chiuomo?
I think...
Rank them. 1, 2 and 3.
I think Chirewa. Chiuomo. Fraser.
Ooh, okay. How many Premier League starts does each make from now on?
What, this season?
In the next 5 years.
Oh.
Ballpark.
Chiuomo
starts
makes.
From now on. Start Premier League starts from now on. Tomorrow.
Next 5 years. Ballpark, yeah. Chiuomo makes 60.
Oh, wow. 60. Okay.
Because it takes him 2, maybe even 3 years before he gets back into it. Or Ben might have a few starts here and there. But then, yeah, I think he's a good player. I think he'll
be. Oh,
so
you really rate him. Okay. I like that.
And that's not obviously not going to be like he's a starter every week from next season onwards.
No.
It's still fairly conservative, but it still means that he's going to do well.
Yeah, I get that there's 38 games a season. Hopefully not 46. But yeah, 38, it's a Premier League game, so that's fine. 5 years, okay. How many Chiuomo?
30.
30? Okay, you're going quite high. Yeah, Nathan Fraser, Premier League starts in the next 5 years.
10.
For who?
That's a tough question. I don't know. I said 10, but I'm not sure. I can't even. It's really tough with all three of them because I don't know. I just don't know whether you never know if a player's really gonna.
I know. I'm putting you on the spot. That's mean to me, really. That was a vicious answer.
Chirewa, I think, has got it, but I'm not sure. But the other two just yet. I think they're good players, but I don't know whether they'll have to go down to the EFL to create their careers before coming back up or not. That's really the question mark.
Wolves will win podcast. 9 points from 9 this week. Oh, they've got so many games to play, haven't they? What does the club need to progress to the next level? I mean, pretty simple, right?
Pretty simple.
They need the money.
Yeah,
they need
more,
the money.
A bit more investment, and obviously to probably move the players from where they're at now to full time and have full time salaries, and then
which means you've got to pay them, right?
Yeah, exactly. Which means you're not.
They can't compete.
Keep the players you've got, but also, you know, attract better players as well. Yeah, they.
There's no way they can compete with that budget, though, can they? This season and going forward with the likes of Newcastle spending what they're going to do. I mean, they're doing so well to even tread water at this moment in time. Well, they're doing better than treading water, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, the facilities that they've got access to and all that kind of stuff is really good. And in comparison to some of these other clubs, is way better. So there is an attraction there for players to come, but there isn't the attraction for the money and for players that don't have another career, because some of them do at this level still, but the players that don't have another career and want to have a career in professional football, they are going to need a salary, and they're going to need money coming in, and it's just not feasible for where the club's at. So that's the next step, and how long it takes them to get there and when they get there is the big question.
Yeah. Okay. Next question. Andy Matthews, who is your tip for the US Masters, Liam?
I wouldn't have a clue, mate. Rahm.
Oh, come on. Oh, good pay you. I actually like Rahm. Rahm's going to be my tip.
There you go.
I mean, Scottie Scheffler's like best player in the world at this moment in time.
I know, really.
But you can't back him at 4-1. But I think Rahm probably at 12-1 is probably your next best bet, to be honest. So well done, Liam. I'm pretty impressed there. Alrighty ho. Question Mr. Judah says, the wonder of two, keen or not keen, Middlesbrough to sneak into the playoffs and get promoted, or Wolves to qualify for Europe?
Oh, go on then, let's have a look.
I read that question wrong because I thought he was going to say Middlesbrough to sneak into the playoffs. I didn't see the and get promoted bit, or Wolves to qualify for Europe. See, I could have the easy cop out here of saying, well, Wolves, is it good for them to qualify for Europe? I didn't make this argument that what you're talking about last week, so I can't really.
You can't.
You go
that.
Back on that, can I? I can't use that, can I? Just trying to think of an out.
The out for you is the barbecue.
That is a good out for me. Yeah, I'm going to take that. I'll take that. I'll take promotion and $3,000 or $4,000 better. I'll be able to travel business again, mate, rather than premium. I was just. I had to make sure I had to count my pennies just in case they beat West Ham, you see. I like this one from Richard Roten. Topical. Which is more scripted to ensure the right one wins, WWE or the Premier League?
Very topical. Very topical.
I don't kind of get what he's getting at, because WWE's real life. So
oh, yeah.
I think he's just talking about the Premier League and he's got wrestling mixed up. So go on, Lee.
Yeah, no, completely agree. Mm. I understand why fans feel this way. Wolves fans will feel hard done by because of a lot of the decisions this season. Obviously, from where we're at, and not just from a general belief point of view, but also as journalists covering the club, I don't think we can go anywhere near suggesting corruption and scripted and all these kind of things. But I understand why fans feel that way. I don't personally. And I think there's no one out to get Wolves as much as they've been hard done by, because unfortunately, there's a lot of other clubs that have had terrible decisions. Some of them not as many decisions as Wolves, but a lot of terrible decisions. And it comes down to a terrible use of the technology and also the people running it, I think. Just very quickly, just
yep.
Probably sort of put a cap on the VAR stuff. I think there's been sort of informal conversations with the PGMOL from Wolves' point of view. As they said in the statement as well, I think they're going to sort of stick by the fact that by the letter of the law, it was offside. But as far as I understand it, they are having a look at how they can sort of make those decisions in the future. They're going to review it, which doesn't really help Wolves now, but maybe in the future it will. There is also the panel that sort of come out in sort of in favour or not in favour of the decision, and then there'll be sort of an independent look at the decision, and that hasn't come out yet, so we don't know that. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see going forward whether they make any changes to the law.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because realistically, they make changes to the law, and next year there'll be 3 or 4 more changes, and they'll be there for the better, and they'll have all the, you know, propaganda at the start of the season. This is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to stop this, and this is how we're going to stop that, and this is going to be a new improved way. They'll find a way of screwing it all up. There's still going to be terrible decisions. We're still going to be debating about horrendous plays every single week, and it's just not going to change. It's just going to move it to another department or another issue. And that's what I can't see. I can't see the light. There's no answer for me there's no black and white answer apart from getting rid of it. And for me, you're not going to get rid of it. So you're always going to have it because you've got human error. And unfortunately, the human error that's supposed to be reduced when they brought in VAR has actually been expanded. And it's not even being expanded double. It's 3, it's 4-fold, it's 5-fold. It's dreadful. It's such a terrible look. And Steve has absolutely nailed it in the comments. He says, getting to the point where I can't be asked anymore. And to be honest, I don't blame him.
Yeah, look, people pay their hard-earned money to go watch football, and then you get moments like that taken away from them, and it's just there's no sort of spontaneity to it anymore, isn't there? Because you don't know, you're sort of second guessing whether there's going to be, a VAR call or a check, and then you're half celebrating. It's just, yeah, it's rubbish. I hate it.
Steve Bromley, luxury tax versus FFP, of course, has been talked about, hasn't it, this week, is gaining momentum and thought to be voted on by the Premier League clubs. So where you can go over said spends, I guess, and you know, you got to pay penalties. Basically protecting, I guess, the bigger clubs who want to spend money and go, well, or it might protect, you know, some of the smaller clubs, I guess, but, you know, to a certain extent. But Manchester City, your Liverpool, your Manchester, they're just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and that gap's going to get, you know, huge, really. What's your thoughts, and would it be better than FFP? Oh, we're going to call it, we're calling it PSR right now. We don't call it FFP anymore.
Yes.
For clubs not being in the top six.
Yeah, no, I think it's something that would only help the clubs with bigger revenues.
Yeah.
I think it's... So just to sort of very quickly summarise what this proposal is, a luxury tax would be clubs that go over the threshold of losses would pay financial penalties rather than have points deductions. There'd be no points deductions. They'll just have financial penalties. And then they would have increasing financial penalties depending on how much they go over. So obviously that money would go up. And then that money would be distributed between the other Premier League clubs. And there's also some suggestions it might go down to struggling EFL clubs as well. That part of it, I don't necessarily mind as much. The part that, to me, doesn't make any sense is, let's say Man City, for example, if they could go over by X amount and spend and keep spending and spend and spend and spend, and at the end of it, they have a £10 million fee to pay, which is not a small fee when it comes to fines, even though for Man City it is a relatively small fee, but for a fine it's quite a hefty one. And they go, okay, well we'll just account for paying this fine at the end. Mm. We'll just keep spending, pay £10 million on top of it at the end. But we've had all the competitive advantage, so it doesn't really matter about the fine. For clubs that can afford the fine, it's fine. For clubs who can't, they have to make sure they don't get a fine. So for me, it just encourages clubs to break the rules with no fear of any competitive sanction. And instead, it's just a financial sanction that they can easily pay. So I just think it makes no sense.
Okay, Greg Ellis says, can you help get me a handle on how much more Wolves could spend if the proposed PSR rules come into effect next season?
Yes, so there was a lot of talk about the changes being to the UEFA squad cost ratio sort of model, which means basically clubs can spend a certain percentage of their revenue on transfers, wages, agent fees, etc. But again, in my opinion, it just allows the top clubs, because they have a bigger revenue, to spend more. So from where Wolves are at, Wolves, when it comes to transfers, wages, agent fees, all this kind of expenditure, are nowhere near the top clubs. And also their revenue is nowhere near the top clubs. It just doesn't make sense for them to be able to close that gap. I mean, Manchester United, in their quarterly revenue earlier this year, posted revenue of £225.8 million. Wolves, for the whole of the last financial year, was about £160-odd million. So United, in a quarter, have dwarfed Wolves' yearly revenue. It just means that they've got more spending power and Wolves don't. So again, I don't think it makes a lot of sense to be able for clubs to have a realistic opportunity of closing the gap.
Andy Hodge, are we likely to see a flat atmosphere for our four remaining home games?
I hope not, but I understand where the question comes from, because fans are getting a bit fed up with obviously VAR and all those kind of things, but also not having the players available. What I hope will add to that and change that and change your opinion as well is that they're going to have Matheus Cunha hopefully starting games potentially from Forest. Hwang Hee-chan, not far away. Bellegarde, obviously slightly better than he was, but not particularly close. But you're going to have Dawson back, and he was on the bench obviously against West Ham. Having these players back is going to be really, really important for where Wolves want to be and need to be. So hopefully having them back and having them performing will up that that atmosphere a little bit. And what are those four home games? They've got Bournemouth, Luton,
Arsenal.
Palace and Arsenal, isn't it? Not in that order. I've got the order slightly mixed. But yeah. So they're fairly good games. Obviously, Arsenal's tough, but fairly good games. You would like to think the Wolves could get something from them.
Do you want to do a quick fire round of questions and answers?
Let's do it. I'll be quick.
Very quick. Whitey, what's more inevitable before the season's out? Wolves being robbed of more points through VAR or due to going on another business trip? Wink, wink. I mean, look, Wolves have been connected, like I keep on saying, with going to America. So I had to go and do a little bit of a recce over 4 nights to see whether Philadelphia would work or not. I think that's fair enough.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely, yeah. And I think that's why an expense-paid trip to a lovely Asian country is coming up for me. I'm going away. I'm heading off. So
you actually now you brought it up. I'm here for the rest of the season now, but I am going to be losing you at some point.
You are. In fact, I don't know if I've described it the right way because I said Asian country. I don't think it comes under Asia, does it?
My job is great. It's great to know where you're going to be.
Yeah, it's in that direction. My geography's not great. I'm heading east.
East.
Oh no! I've just had a quick Google. It just say West Asia, so I'll take that.
It's in the Middle East. Same Middle East.
I'm going to Qatar.
Okay.
Which is a bizarre location, I know, but I've got a friend.
It's good for you to go in for the human rights, I guess.
Shut up, man. I've got a friend who's working and living over there. Rosie's not keen at all to visit the Middle East. So I thought, well, I've never been. This is probably the one of very few opportunities I'm going to have. Let's go give it a go. So.
Was only going meant for the to be booze? Missing...
Well, I will be having a little bit of booze. Why not?
You won't be having it in the streets, lad. You'll be locked up.
Could you imagine? Judah, please, can you bail me out? I was only meant to be missing the Luton game. But Bournemouth had been rescheduled for that week.
Wow.
And also away, so bad timing.
Who are you leaving me with?
Couldn't tell you, maybe. They won't be anywhere near as good.
Oh, 100%. Not a chance. Carver, you can do well. I brought the see when I've been away. I think I missed three games this season, two or three games. I obviously brought the potty mic to Barbados with me. So, will you be bringing the potty mic to Qatar?
Not a chance.
Oh, mate, come on, gotta go above and beyond for the peeps.
Yeah, but it's different when you're lounging around, sat there with your missus. I'm going out with a load of mates. We're going to be riding camels, and that's not a euphemism. We're going to be. Sand dunes and the whole lot.
Judas circa 1998, that is.
So, no, I don't think that's going to happen.
Oh, brilliant. Helen Jones, do we know who got booked on Saturday after the final whistle? It's Cunha, wasn't it?
And Sarabia.
Sarabia got it, yeah.
And Sean Derry.
And Sean Derry as well. But not Gary O'Neill?
No, not Gary O'Neill, because he is on two, so if he gets a ban if he gets one more. So he's been as careful as he can not to get one.
So is he get a ban? I mean... it's actually gives us a perfect point, really. Does his two yellow cards go through until the end of the season? So if he gets a third on, let's say, game week 37, he'll miss game week 38. Or if he gets one on the last day of the season against Liverpool, does he miss the first game of the following season?
Yes, I'm not 100% sure.
No, okay, sorry. As I was trying to explain that, I was like, oh, Keenan might not know this. What we do know is that... if Nelson Semedo picks up a booking on Saturday at Nottingham Forest, he will get a two-game ban. It's the last game that will count towards suspension. After that, he can get as many bookings as he wants. But if he gets a yellow card on Saturday, dare I say it, there's a decent chance, I think, away at Forest, then he will miss the two games after that, which I believe are Arsenal and... Bournemouth, I want to say... Go on, Palace?
It's Bournemouth. Bournemouth.
Bournemouth. Alice, Arsenal and Bournemouth. So he'll miss those two games if he gets booked. But it's only this game he's got to get through and then he should be fine. So hopefully he's okay. Who's going to be a better champion, Cody or Roman, says Ricky?
No, I couldn't care less.
Tribal chief, come on. There's only one. You said you liked it, Keno, come on.
No, I don't care. Very quickly, so I think, I forget who it was who asked, but someone's asked about the Lamina situation with the yellow cards, just because you mentioned Semedo there.
Yeah, I was going to bring it next, but carry on.
Oh, go on, you can read it out.
No, go on.
No, you might as well read it out, I'll give them credit.
If Mario Lamina, says Vicky, was to receive two yellow cards in the Forest match, would he A, have a two-match ban for reaching the 10 yellow card threshold, B, a one-match ban as the red card punishment would supersede it, or three, a three-match ban for the two combined? I think I know the answer to this, but can I give it to you or not? Unless you've got the answer.
I do, but you can give it a go.
So I assume he's on eight then. Is a yellow card, Lamina?
Yes.
So I think if he got sent off, he would get...
With two yellow cards, three the question.
Two yellow cards. I feel like he would get a three-match ban. He'd get miss the one for the red card and get two for the two yellow cards and get three matches total.
Incorrect.
Oh, no, really? Go on.
Stinker.
Two.
You'll remember this happened earlier in the season with Lamina. He was on three yellow cards and got sent off in the game before Bournemouth, but I can't remember which one it was, and he got two yellow cards.
Okay.
And the question was, does he now have a red card ban and the yellow card ban combined? And the answer is no. Those two yellow cards that went towards the red card, because they became a red card, they get wiped out. So he stays on the same amount of yellow cards. So he went into the Newcastle game, I think it was,
right
after the Bournemouth
and could have
game,
got a ban then.
And he was still on the number of yellow cards he was in the game before, but missed the Bournemouth game with a ban because of the red card.
Okay.
So if he gets two yellow cards against against Forest, he'll serve a one-match ban because of the red card. And he'll go into the following game still on eight yellow cards. So,
but then that would be irrelevant then anyway because it's passed, right?
There is a ban for 15 yellow cards, I think it is, but it's very. I don't think any player's ever got there.
Crikey.
It's very far away. So yeah, it's very unlikely they'll get anywhere near that. But
I mean, you can get a 3-game ban. You just get done for violent conduct, and you're missing 3 games. But
so Lamina will be he still want to get through. Well, I say sort of get through because he has to get sent off really to have any suspension. So, he'll be fine, really. It's the situation really is Semedo and this Forest game because one...
Okay, we've got to move on. One hour, 16 minutes, sorry. I haven't got to Forest yet. Right, Steve says, would you support a mass walkout if we get another ridiculous decision against Arsenal? So let's say, same situation happens, 89th minute, Wolves 2-1 down, denied a perfectly good goal. Would you support a walkout? I mean, I think most people walk out, but let's say it happens in the 60th minute. Would you support a mass walkout?
It's not really my place to say whether I support it or not. I mean, I find it very interesting if something like that happened. It's just difficult to try and, you try and get people together to do demonstrations like that. It doesn't often happen. So I'd be surprised, to be honest, but it would be certainly interesting to see something like that happen.
Right, it's Wolves and it's Nottingham Forest. It's Nuno. That guy, that character, versus Gary O'Neill. The first meeting, of course. Oh, it wouldn't be the first meeting between the two managers, right? I assume that they would have met while he was Bournemouth Spurs, maybe? No.
No, that was before.
So it would be the first meeting between the two.
I believe so.
Yeah, first meeting between the two, Gary O'Neill and Nuno Espirito Santo. So Wolves, 11th position, 31 games played, 42 points. Leaving that gap, it hurts, doesn't it? Especially without giving West Ham those points, it really kills them. But if we're looking at 8th for European football, I still want to be looking up rather than down on the table. That gap now is 5 points to Newcastle, 5 points. Now for me, they've got the likes of Bournemouth to come, the likes of Liverpool to come, Palace to come. I don't care, Liam. For me, Europe is on the line in this game. I'm going to say they're going to get beat by Arsenal, okay? I just think that they'll lose to Arsenal, unfortunately. For me, draw not good enough. If you're going to have to maintain any kind of European thoughts, you've got to go to Nottingham Forest on Saturday, who are fighting for their lives, by the way, on and off the pitch, and you've got to go there and win. No excuses. I mean, look, if they draw or lose, well, whatever, they're safe, fine. But if they still want a glimmer of hope of European football, they have got to go to the City Ground and they've got to win that football game on Saturday by hook or by crook.
Yeah, 5 points off, as you say, but also Bournemouth, same games as Wolves, 1 point off. Fulham played a game extra, but 3 points off.
I'm not too bothered about them, Liam. I'm more interested in Brighton, Chelsea, Newcastle, those teams above them. I don't really care about the ones below them. It's the ones above them they've got to go and overtake. The likes of Chelsea.
I agree, but Wolves are in danger without picking up results of finishing 13th. And look, it'd still be probably a pretty good season considering where they've come, but for where they have been this season and what they could have achieved, it's would be a frustration to finish there. So I think you've got to bear it in mind, especially considering they've still got to play Bournemouth as well. But it's not an impossible task for them to make these points up and still get in. It's definitely not an impossible task.
They have to win, but though, Liam. They have to go to Forest and win.
I completely agree with you. I think they have to go and win this weekend. Now, obviously, mathematically, if they don't go, even if they lose against Forest, mathematically, it's not going to be over. But I think considering where they're at, the amount of games they've got left, the teams they've still got to play, and where the teams above them are at in terms of points and fixtures, I think Wolves have to beat Forest. I really do. And they're more than capable of beating Forest. I think it'll be potentially a game that suits Wolves in terms of style and atmosphere. Now, they've got to get over what will be a quite intense City Ground atmosphere, I would expect, where they will be wanting to be right on top of you, be behind their side, as you say, fighting for their life. And it's going to be difficult for Wolves. But Wolves can play away from home, which they've done very well this season, I think really effectively on the counter-attack. And that's an opportunity to silence that crowd. I think if you absorb enough pressure and have the players to spring the attacks, and that probably means you have to have Ryan Aitnori playing, and obviously we'll find out more this week where he's at after coming off with a knock against West Ham, then Wolves, I've still got the capabilities of doing it and winning. And I think you probably need, in this game, the fullbacks or the wingbacks, if they play that system, are going to be really, really important. And that's Semedo and probably Doherty, if we're going to say that Aitnori, if he does play...
Well, I was going to give you my team, Liam, then you're going to see if you agree or not. Shall I do
that?
Yeah,
hit me.
Okay, my team's different to what you were going to say there now. But again, you obviously saw Saturday, so you probably know more than me about which way Gary's thinking, especially for us, like I say, a difficult game. I'm going to go, it's going to be a 5-2-3. Okay. Or 3 at the back or 5, whichever you want to say. So I'm going to say Saar, as I go right to left, and we have Semedo on the right. We've then got Kilman. We've then got the return of Craig Dawson, Totti Gomez, and the left wing back, Hugo Bueno. Two in midfield, João Gomez and Mario Lemina. Three up top, right to left. Pablo Sarabia on the right. Okay, I'll go left. Pablo Sarabia on the right. Ryan Aitnori is okay to play on the left, and the return of Mateus Cunha up top.
Okay,
is my team.
I like it. My team is exactly the same, bar.
Oh.
Doc plays ahead of Hugo Bueno.
Do you think he's taking that mantle now of being that left wing back if and when Ryan Aitnori's not there?
At the moment, I think he's slightly ahead. Now, the reason I could see your team being correct is that if Aitnori is playing on that side, because obviously Doc and Tommy Doyle played along that left side against West Ham. It worked really well, but it worked really well because they were often swapping when Wolves had possession.
So did Doc do well? Were you quite pleased with the way Doc's performance then compared to a lot of the others in that team?
First half, really good. Second half, dropped off. I mean, there was a big error in his pass for the West Ham penalty. He was poor in possession and a lot of skewed clearances and a bit shaky second half, but first half really good. And as I say, him and Doyle were swapping, so Doyle was dropping a bit deeper when Wolves had possession to get him on the ball and come inside and get on the ball and start to play as a midfielder. And then Doc was overlapping into a left forward position when Wolves were in possession. So it worked really well. So the reason I think you could be right, even though I've decided I'm going to go with Doc, I'm going to stick with it. The reason potentially you could be right, if that team is correct, is that if Aitnori plays on that left side, and obviously is going to be an out-and-out attacking player rather than what Doyle was playing, you will potentially need a Hugo Bueno more defensively minded sat behind him. So there's definitely an argument for that. I do think that the way Doc played in that first half on the left, and also his experience, will get him the nod.
Could you see Doc getting a run of games here now, between now and the end of the season, regardless of, let's say, I know he's okay, you know, Pedro Neto, let's assume that we don't see Pedro Neto this season again. Could you see Doc being a more regular starter? I mean, I'm surprised with the lack of games that he's had up to this day. He's starting to get back into the side now. And look, by in part by Nelson Semedo being so good this season overall, I think, you know, most people, one of the most improved players probably, I would say, bar maybe Ryan Aitnori, probably the most improved player of the season. So kudos to him. But do you think that Doc could be someone who plays the majority of games between now from here on in, or will it be again a courses of courses approach? Of course, if Nelson Semedo gets booked on Saturday, he's going to play at least two more games, isn't he? But probably moving across to the right. But could you see him going with the experience now until the end of the season?
I think it will heavily depend on the players available. Obviously, Cunha coming back in isn't going to massively affect that, but I think Huang coming back in could, because you then have Huang playing centrally, Sarabia on the right, Cunha on the left, Aitnoi back at left wing back. I don't think there's a space for Doc to come back into that 11. So I think it depends on the players they get back. For the time being, I can see him having a bit of a run. I think if you get those players that I've just mentioned fit and available and starting games, he might be in trouble.
Wang Yichan you mentioned there, and Craig Dawson was on the bench, wasn't he, against West Ham. Do you expect Dawson to be back in, and do you think Huang could make the bench on Saturday?
I think that's the most likely outcome. Obviously, this is before we've spoken to Gary this week, but I think, you know, hedging my bets before we find out a bit more from the man himself, I think that's probably the most likely scenario. He said they could both make West Ham, but they're more likely to make the Forest game. And considering Dawson made West Ham and was an unused sub, I think it's likely that he could come in from the start. And with someone like Huang, probably means if he is available, it'll be a bench. So that, for me, feels like the most realistic outcome. And hopefully there's no setbacks leading up to the game on Saturday.
No, we've seen how cautious they've been with Mateus Cunha since he's been back. 15 minutes, then 25 minutes, and maybe he might... I mean, I'd be staggered if he lasts more than maybe 65 minutes, let's say, on Saturday. If he does get the nod, Liam, I think you'll probably think the same as well, that he'll probably have an hour in him, maybe a little bit more than an hour, but probably not too much more than that. Do you think that, like I say, previously we've discussed about they've been very cautious with Cunha because of the Pedro Neto situation, and even though he wanted to go, they've held him back, and this would be the start, but definitely not 90-minute start. Do you feel like if Huang Yichan comes into this side, it will be similar, hold him back, bench, 10-15 minutes max, hold him back half an hour maybe against Arsenal, hold him back again, maybe ready for a Bournemouth start at best?
Obviously, Huang's got a bit of a previous, hasn't he, with injuries, so they're going to be fairly cautious, I think. So I agree, I think it will be a cautious approach while also trying to maximise what you can get out of him, and that will be sub appearances for at least a couple before he gets an opportunity. So yeah, slightly off there with Cunha. He got 20 minutes in his return at Burnley, and he came on in the 55th minute, actually.
55th, so what's that, 35, 40 minutes?
Yeah, and with obviously 10 minutes on top of that as well, so he played about 45 really, okay, against West Ham. So that's why I think he's probably in a position to start. Like, I don't think he did great really when he came on against West Ham. But
you said he was ineffective, right?
Yeah, ineffective, quiet, didn't really get on the ball or was willing to run in behind as much.
I mean, look, he still walks into front line.
Yeah. So I think it's likely that you see him start.
So do you think 60 to 70, something around that?
Yeah, that seems realistic. And if you can do that and then replace him with Huang, Wolves' squad looks, you know, to get Huang the minutes he needs, Wolves' squad looks a lot healthier already, albeit still small. It looks better for having those players, you know, available.
So Forest level with Luton on points, right in the relegation mire, of course. They've got this appeal that will be heard for their PSR points deduction. Some kid called Gibbs White available and will probably be useful and a threat. And we'll want to prove yet again a point, and I'm sure will aggravate many fans throughout the game as he does, because he likes to play up to it, and you know people love or hate his antics. But Forest are more than just Gibbs White; they're playing some better football. I think they become more competitive in games. Maybe unlucky to not pick up a point at Spurs on Saturday, but look, it's not going to be an easy game, Liam. But at the same time, this Wolves side, if they do play to their capabilities, regardless of some of the players that they're missing, should or could quite easily come away with a win. What do they need to do and who needs to turn up?
Yeah, it's Wolves have done really well on their travels in games that feel similar to this. And the Burnley game has got a very different feel. You know, away at a club that Wolves have struggled against, you know, midweek, under the lights, tough place to go. This has got the feeling, because Forest want to play, they want to play football, and albeit it's never an easy place to go, and I think, as you say, they're definitely looking better under Nuno. They want to play, they want to come out, they want to be expansive. I think Wolves have got the opportunity to put in a big performance and pick them off. And if you can do that, Wolves have got more than enough quality, despite injuries, to go and win the game. Now, the players that have to turn up are probably some of the key players you've already mentioned. You need a Max Kilman to be really, really, what's the word, commanding in his area and of the defensive line. And if Dawson is back alongside him from the start, I think that will really help him. Lamina's going to be really big for this game, and someone like João Gomes alongside him, they have to be in there and winning those battles and controlling the game. And that doesn't always mean having the possession to control the game, but if you can contain Forest and win the ball back at the right times, Wolves can spring attacks that will be devastated, even without having someone like Pedro Neto in the team. And then the final player to mention has to be Ryan Aignori, if and when he is available for the game. Him and the form he's in will be crucial to Wolves getting any result here, I think. He's got an eye for goal. He's full of confidence. He's quick. He's tricky. He's difficult to play against. And he's going on these marauding runs at the moment. And if Wolves, as I say, can spring these attacks, no player in the league is going to want Ryan Aignori running at them with the ball at the moment. I think that's going to be really key to Wolves getting any result and hopefully a win at the City Ground.
And we're giving away a Castor hoodie this time. We haven't given away a Castor hoodie this season, so we'll give away a lovely little Castor fitted hoodie for the correct guests. Just all retweet this podcast, either myself or Liam's, and you'll be entered into the prize draw. We'll pick it before the game, and of course, you get the correct score. You know what happens. You win the shirt. It's free. Just an RT. We're not asking you to follow us or do anything like that. RT the pod. Get it out there, baby. And hopefully you got a free Castor hoodie coming your way. We'll go with your prediction, Kino. I will go first. I'm going to say it's going to be Nottingham Forest 1, Wolverhampton Wanderers 2. Late Mateus Cunha strike stays on the pitch for 74 minutes in the 73rd when his board's just about to go up. Heads Wolves ahead. They hold on. It's 2-1.
This has happened a few times recently.
Oh.
Where me and you, great minds think alike, have agreed.
Well, not if you're listening to the other podcast, whoever he is, Made in Chelsea guy. thickest guy in the room. So you don't two great minds think alike.
Shut up. I'm also going Wolves 2.
Seven A's, 3 A stars at GCSE, 2 A's and a B at A level. But yeah, thickest person in the room. Cheers,
stop
lad.
Interrupting. No one cares, mate.
Go on.
2-1 Wolves.
Ooh, same.
Let's,
love it.
Let's do it.
I mean, you've been wrong in the last couple of games. I've been wrong-ish. Do you know who's been right?
No.
The eight ball.
Oh, my word.
The eight ball. When we asked the eight ball about West Ham and we said, can we get a win? I said, draw. You said, draw. Said, don't count on it. So the eight ball has been right. The eight ball's right last three. Are you ready? Should we ask the eight ball?
Let's do it.
Okay. Eight ball, and I know you love this sound as well. Makes you think of delicious, delicious, delicious extracurricular activities as Kino when he was an 18-year-old lad. Here we go. Eight ball. Will Wolves beat Nottingham Forest on Saturday?
Terrible noise.
Oh, no. Oh, Kino. Kino, Kino. Swear down, this is what it says. My source says no.
Oh, great.
Oh, eight ball. I thought he only had like one negative setting. He's got like eight.
Oh, buzzing. If it's right as well, we need to smash this eight ball to pieces.
Oh, you won't be able to open that up anyway. Right. Thank you very much, Liam. We have gone for a record. Not a record, but it's 93-minute podcast, but that's what we do, innit?
We love it.
Fingers crossed, we get a win on Saturday and Nottingham Forest get demolished by Wolves. And when this clip loads, which it isn't doing, which is very annoying because I need to time it right, let's hope that Nuno's men, let's hope they rest in peace.